At the tail end of the Civil War, another battle stirred the city of Bloomington, the War on Dogs. The threat of rabies created panic. The city looked at ways to ban or limit the dog population. GLT's Mary Cullen has produced this episode of McHistory in partnership with the McLean County Museum of History. An 1865 paragraph editorial details public distaste for canine pets as the city prepared to tax dogs.
As long ago as 1861, the legislature passed a law empowering boards of supervisors to abolish dogs.
We see in this paragraph editorial this kind of intense dislike of dogs. They are a nuisance, the paragraph is arguing, but they're also a public health hazard because of rabies. They're referring to dogs as curs, right? And they're infesting our community. I think what this excerpt really gets after, this July 21st, 1865 paragraph screed, if you will, against the canine race, is really that this idea of pampered pets that we live with today.
Tori Moray, curator of digital humanities.
Bill Kemp, librarian with the McLean County Museum of History.
In most cases, dogs are a nuisance. They bark, they howl, they yell, they growl, they snarl, they yelp, they whine, they make horrible noises. They congregate on street corners, in fence corners, around house corners, in the middle of the streets, on each side of the street, in highways, in byways, and doorways. They jump out from behind barrels, boxes, boards, bushes, and woodpiles, and growl and snarl and bark and bristle up their hair and snap their teeth and scare folks. They scratch children, kill chickens, steal sheep, rob the smokehouse, lie around in the sun and generate fleas, and don't do any good anyway.
Mid-19th century, animals, dogs were often viewed more from a utilitarian perspective. They were used on the farm as work dogs. They were used for sport, hunting dogs, obviously. They were used to protect private property, right, junkyard dogs. They were also used for businesses, for mascots. And as a mascot, they would, again, protect property, be there for companionship, and also act to keep the rodent population down.
They ought to be abolished, to a considerable extent at least. The peace of the community demands it. They are nuisances and ought to be placed where the public mind will rest secure in the belief that they are in the course of ultimate extinction.
Why the fear of dogs? Why the hatred, if you will, of dogs in the 19th century? Well, there's one reason for that, and it was the fear, the real fear of hydrophobia, what we would call rabies. Today, this is a virus, obviously. Most of us are familiar with this because it's still around today in our wild animal population, primarily bats, but possums and others as well. So this is a virus. It's spread by the saliva, the bite of an infected animal that can also be a human being or a person.
If the tax law were enforced, and only those dogs whose taxes are paid permitted to reside in our city, the dog population would be decidedly improved in character and greatly lessened in number.
The symptoms of hydrophobia, if you were to contract this, really beggar all description. And if there were all sorts of horrible, awful ways to die in the 19th century, and hydrophobia or rabies would be one of the worst, certainly. So hydrophobia, fear of water, is a symptom. Hypersalivation, difficulty swallowing, agitation, uncontrollable violent acts, and then paralysis, and then death. If you were to exhibit these symptoms, death would always follow. And it wasn't until the mid-1880s that Louis Pasteur and Emile Roux developed a vaccine, so it was not treatable until the latter parts of the 19th century.
Taxation, if strictly enforced, would accomplish the consummation most devoutedly to be wished. Will our city parents do it? Will they heed the universal feeling of their constituency, which finds utterance in a thousand ways? From the great heart of a distracted community, from the soul-sick moans of the invalid, yearning, oh, how fondly, for a single moment of dreamy quiet, undisturbed by the horrid yells of the midnight canine prowlers.
So in January of 1852, the Bloomington City Marshal is empowered, has the duty to kill any at-large roaming dog. Not only impound that animal, but to kill that animal. There is a hydrophobia, rabies outbreak that spring. We know that because in May, dog owners are putting their animals down that exhibit symptoms of hydrophobia.
From the shriek of the timid maiden who shies around the corner to escape a dogfight, from the sugar plum lips of the lisping babe as it shrieks in terror from the approach of a blear-eyed bulldog, from the demonic grimaces, the agonizing contortions, the soul-freezing yells, the poisonous hissings of the victims of hydrophobia, from all of these and others too numerous to mention, come the words, yelled into our ears like a piercing thunderbolt, dogs ought to be abolished.
So then in August of 1852, in the summer, the city passes kind of a sweeping ordinance to control dogs, and they do that through regulation. So dog owners have to register their animals with the city. Then an annual tax is placed on dog owners, $1.25 for males, $3 a year for females. That doesn't seem like a lot of money to us today, but if you adjust for inflation, $3 back in 1852 would be the equivalent of about $90 today. So what you're doing basically is you're prohibiting the working class and even lower middle class folks from legally owning a dog in the city of Bloomington. You're pricing them out of the pet ownership business. And then these animals that registered had to wear a city-issued metal collar. Failure to do so then would land the animal. The animal then could be confiscated and then killed by the city marshal.
Cities undoubtedly have this right. But so far as we are conversant with the history of dog legislation, no action commensurate with the subject has ever been had.
So until there is a cure for rabies, you have these types of measures passed by the city of Bloomington. Sometimes you have people take the law into their own hands and you have vigilante campaigns. For example, in July of 1858, there's a two-day vigilante campaign with a group of individuals poisoning dogs because of a rabies outbreak. They're poisoning both wild dogs that are roaming loose with no owners and also dogs that are held by owners. And over a two-day period, 25 dogs in Bloomington Normal are killed by a mysterious band of vigilantes.
The man who pays taxes on his dog should be protected in his property, and the system of promiscuous dog poisoning should be stopped by law if necessary.
And rabies, as I said, still remains a problem today, but it was certainly a problem for much of the 20th century. A well-known incident is in January of 1943. A rabid dog runs wild for the better part of a day or two in Mount Hope and Funks Grove Townships. This is in the southern tier of McLean County. And this rabid dog is biting dairy cows. He's biting and attacking hogs and other dogs in these two townships. And farmers have to make the decision because, yes, you can treat rabies at this time, but it's very expensive. So they have to decide, are they going to spend treatments on their beloved pet dog or the dairy cows that might have been infected by this dog? So rabies remains with us even to this day.
GLT's Mary Cullen produced this episode of McHistory featuring Bill Kemp and Tori Moore of the McLean County Museum of History.